In Augustine Burroughs' 2002 memoir, Running with Scissors, he describes being given away by his mother as a teenager to be raised by her eccentric psychiatrist and his family. In the film adaptation of the book, we see Augustine recording the strange workings of the household in his journal. One anecdote in particular seems to capture the dysfunction he finds there.
Dear journal, somebody has to write down what's happening to me. It's not to be believed. So I guess that person is me. Day 7, and still no sign of my mother. This place is worse than any loony bin. I'm not kidding. Every decision in the house is made by something the Finches call
Bible dipping. It's like asking a magic 8-ball a question, only you're asking God. Ask God a question, Augustine.
I don't know.
Oh, for goodness sakes, Augustine, it's not that hard. Should we have fish sticks for dinner?
The audience watches as one of the psychiatrist's daughters, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, opens her Bible and turns her eyes away from the page as she randomly drops her finger to a passage. The camera closes in on the word she selects by chance.
Awakening.
Paltrow's character immediately attempts to interpret the meaning of this word.
Awakening. As in, awakening our taste buds. Super, God wants us to have fish sticks.
While this scene is meant to communicate the eccentricities of the family in which Augustine suddenly finds himself a member, it also presents what is made to appear as a strange use of books, to predict the future. It compares Bible dipping to a magic 8-ball, a way of knowing that carries the authority of a parlor trick and the rationality of a moon landing conspiracy. We are meant to think this is strange and unusual, and it tells us something about the relationship of this family to reality. After all, who would leave major life decisions up to randomly selected passages from books, especially when the stakes are higher than fish sticks? However, this act, predicting the future from the pages of a book, has a long history. While it may seem strange and unusual to some, this practice, sometimes called bibliomancy, is as old as reading itself. Today, on Chapters, we delve into the history of bibliomancy to discover how readers have used their books to shape their fates, both great and small, and how some readers today still find prophecies in their books, even if now the book of choice is a Tumblr page. This is Chapters. Probably the best-known use of books to predict the future, or offer some kind of prophecy, is the use of spiritual or religious books. Just as the characters in Augustine Burroughs' memoir use the Bible, many readers have and continue to use the Bible, the Quran, and other holy texts as a place to find purpose or direction. Let's turn our attention to St. Augustine, who lived in the 4th century AD. No relation to Augustine Burroughs, who is very much still alive. The Confessions of St. Augustine serves as a significant example in this history. Readers of his autobiography know that Augustine denied himself few pleasures in his early years. In his teens, he would famously pray, quote, "Grant me chastity and continence, but not yet." After a period of spiritual turmoil, Augustine converted to Christianity in the year 386 at the age of 31. In his autobiography, he describes this experience in detail. His conversion was inspired in large part by a voice that told him to take up the Bible and read a chapter at random. This is his description of what happened. Quote, "So was I speaking and weeping in the most bitter contrition of my heart, when lo, I heard from a neighboring house a voice, as of boy or girl I know not, chanting and oft repeating, take up and read, take up and read. Instantly, my countenance altered. I began to think most intently whether children were wont in any kind of play to sing such words. Nor could I remember ever to have heard the like. So checking the torrent of my tears, I arose, interpreting it to be no other than a command from God to open the book and read the first chapter I should find. For I had heard of Antony, that coming in during the reading of the gospel, he received the admonition, as if what was being read was spoken to him. Go, Sell all thou hast, and give to the poor, and thou shalt have treasure in heaven, and come and follow me. And by such oracle he was forthwith converted unto thee. Eagerly then I returned to the place where Alpius was sitting, for there had I laid the volume of the apostle when I arose thence. I seized, opened, and in silence read that section on which my eyes first fell. Not in rioting and drunkenness, not in chambering and wantonness, not in strife and envying, but put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ, and make not provision for the flesh and concupiscence. No further would I read, nor needed I. For instantly at the end of this sentence, by a light as it were of serenity infused into my heart, all the darkness of doubt vanished away. Augustine converted to Christianity, became a priest, and lived out his life as a bishop. All events he reflected in hindsight began with a clear message delivered from a randomly selected passage of the Bible. Christianity is full of such randomly selected prophecies. One 19th century history of bibliomancy recorded an anecdote about St. Francis of Assisi, the founder of the Franciscans. Having taken a vow of poverty and devoted his life to serving God and others, St. Francis wondered if he could still permit himself one luxury, his books. Quote, having denied himself the possession of anything but coats and a cord, and still having doubts whether he might not possess books, this history noted, Francis first prayed and then casually opened upon Mark chapter 4. He randomly fell upon this passage. Unto you is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables. From this, Francis drew the conclusion that books were not necessary for him. Central to this act appears to be clarity in forming a question, a belief in the authority of the book in use, and the ability to interpret the randomly selected passage for an answer. These two accounts use the Bible to answer spiritual questions, but as the Augustine Burroughs anecdote reveals, readers have used the Bible to answer questions great and small, sacred and secular. In 1901, Irish writer Sarah Grand was on a speaking tour of the United States. Born in Ireland and raised in England, Grand had risen to fame on the reputation of The Heavenly Twins, a novel that advocated the cause of the so-called New Woman of the late 1800s. Valuing financial independence, the right to contraception, and personal fulfillment over marriage and motherhood, her work proved controversial to some readers. While her subject matter may have been contentious, her style proved more offensive to some. A cat could do better literature than this, Mark Twain penned in the margins of his copy of The Heavenly Twins. Despite his critique, her popularity fueled a nationwide tour and a newspaper sketch in which she reflected on her early struggles as a writer and her turn to bibliomancy to decide her career path. Quote, an incident out of the common is told of the publication of one of her first stories, the sketch began. Her experiences in trying to get her work published were for years extremely trying and discouraging. No writer's early history is more instructive or inspiring than hers. Sarah Grand had tried and tried and tried and tried to get her stories printed. Nobody would have them. Publishers wastebasketed her sketches without ever taking the trouble to write and say they did not want her effusions. At last, discouraged, she asked herself seriously one day whether it was worthwhile to attempt literature anymore. She had come to that state which acts on an author's mind like a death chill, the state wherein he asks himself, after all, have I mistaken my gifts? Have I, after all, no talent for writing? Sarah Grand, as many women and some men have done in strait places, essayed bibliomancy. She took a Bible and opened it at random for a text that would guide her. She saw this, The stone which the builders rejected will become the head of the corner. Prophecy or not, it gave her a brace up to send out her manuscript once more, and that time it was accepted. This account meets the tropes we've heard so far in bibliomancy. She had a clear question in mind, she turned to the Bible for an answer, and received a prophecy which appeared to offer real direction. But this story has some strange twists, especially in the reporter's account. First, Gran did not consult the Bible for help with a spiritual crisis, instead seeking help with her career. This seems especially important when thinking about a writer who became known in large part for her advocacy of women's right to be independent and have careers of their own. The reporting of the story should also make us think about how readers in 1901 thought of bibliomancy as something, quote, many women and some men have done. This phrasing might lead us to believe bibliomancy was demeaned as a trivial parlor game common among women. In fact, a popular book marketed towards women in this period was The Lady's Oracle by Henry Cornelius Agrippa, a reprint of a 16th century book consisting of pithy fortunes that female readers could select at random for answers to questions about their love lives. Shall I soon be courted? Am I still thought a child? Ought I believe the tender vows that are breathed to me? How many husbands shall I have? Readers could choose among these and other questions, then randomly select a symbol from many on a page and seek out the fortune that matched that symbol and question. I found a copy of this book and tried it out for myself. I selected the question, shall I have many adventures, and received as a fortune, yes, until you are wrinkled. Through 21st century eyes, The Lady's Oracle appears part wish fulfillment, part choose your own adventure. This experiment left me wondering if, by the 19th and 20th centuries, bibliomancy had just become the province of women dreaming about their love lives. What other kinds of books have people used to get answers to life's questions? Readers turn to the Bible, the Quran, and even the Iliad and Odyssey from a sense of a personal connection to the text. Besides The Lady's Oracle, what other books did readers choose at random for answers to personal questions? For answers, I turned to the letters of Robert Browning and Elizabeth Barrett. Browning and Barrett were two well-known 19th century English poets. Barrett is perhaps most famous for her love sonnets, inspired by her love for Robert Browning. On February 11, 1846, Robert Browning wrote to Elizabeth Barrett a day after proposing marriage. Their courtship had been challenging. Elizabeth lived in her father's house as a semi-invalid. Her father disapproved of marriage for all of his children, making the pretense of secrecy vital to her relationship with Robert Browning. After she'd accepted his proposal, he wanted to explain how he'd decided to propose to her, a story that relied entirely on bibliomancy. Browning explained that he randomly selected a book off his shelf. Quote, "An old fancy seized me to try the sort and dip into the first page of the first I chanced upon for my fortune. I said, what will be the event of my love for her, in so many words, and my book turned out to be Cerutti's Italian Grammar." Randomly selecting an Italian grammar book from the shelf might not seem to bode well for a question about love, as Browning playfully explained, quote, "such dreadful possibilities of stumbling on conditional moods, imperfect tenses, singular numbers lay ahead." But he found the answer he was looking for. "Well, I ventured, and what did I find?" he asked. "This, which I copy from the book now. If we love in the other world as we do in this, I shall love thee to eternity." Browning and Barrett married and lived the rest of their married life in Italy, removing to a climate they hoped would benefit her health. The history of bibliomancy shows readers turning to books for questions of faith, career, and love. But even hearing its history from Augustine to Robert Browning to Sarah Grand and everything in between makes it seem both quaint and strange. Sometimes when we picture something in history, our imaginations trick us into collapsing the past into an idea of a time that appears both deceptively simpler and naive. As the Augustine Burroughs anecdote at the top of the show reminds us, people in the modern era still turn to books for fortunes. But is it only the province of eccentrics? Or an act of religious faith focusing on sacred books? What does bibliomancy look like today? And what might its future be? For answers, I turn to Tumblr. In spring of 2012, the Bibliomancy Oracle debuted on Tumblr, offering prophecies to visitors willing to clear their minds, focus on a question, and press a button on the homepage that would generate a randomly selected fortune. In this case, excerpts from contemporary works of poetry. I spoke with the founder of the site, Reb Livingston, to gain some insight into her project and what bibliomancy can offer readers today.
Hi, I'm Reb Livingston. I'm the curator of the Bibliomancy Oracle, and I'm also a writer and editor.
Well, thank you. Welcome, and thank you for speaking with me today. So I guess I'm just wondering, with the Bibliomancy Oracle, what inspired this project?
I've always been interested in divination, and I, you know, tarot cards, and I do dream interpretation, and, you know, just, you know, an interest in astrology and all those kind of related things. I mean, obviously, like, there's some I'm more interested in others. But I had found a website that, you know, had a bunch of different tarot readings, had runes, and also had bibliomancy, which until that point, I was not familiar with it. But this site, the texts they were using were religious texts, like the King James Bible, the Quran. And when you ask a question, it would just give you this large chunk of text. And I didn't find it particularly useful because it would be, you know, like a page from, you know, one of these holy texts. But I wasn't able to seem to find, at least within these texts, the answers I was looking for or any type of answer.
Reb told me this moment inspired her to create her own site, partially with a desire to have texts offer prophecies not based in religious texts, but also to offer readings that felt more like answers.
I was just thinking more if this was curated a little bit differently, as opposed to just, you know, having just a random piece of text from an entire book. I was thinking, you know, more if the text seemed to be more like actual answers to things.
To create her own site, Reb drew on the books she read in her own life, which at that time was mostly poetry.
I was able to find just pretty regularly short, tight, concise things that could possibly be answers.
I was curious as to how Reb selected lines of poetry to use as prophecies for her site, and she told me that she's always on the lookout for things that strike her, and she determines what strikes her by imagining the kinds of questions users might bring to the site.
I think people, I mean, I think it's kind of very basic, you know, not basic, but, you know, very kind of classical. I mean, I think people ask about work, you know, like their careers. I think people ask about family members. I think people ask about love. And I think people a lot of times, most of the time, are asking about themselves, which is, you know, we all care about ourselves. But I think, you know, they're most questions are pretty self-centered. And I don't say that, I don't mean that negatively. But I mean, we want to know about something about us.
To create her Bibliomancy Oracle, Reb didn't collect her prophecies into a volume to be published and put on a reader's shelf, like the Lady's Oracle of the 19th century. Instead, she turned to Tumblr.
I started collecting a database, and I started using Tumblr because what I needed was a random number generator, something to automatically just pick a text. And instead of, you know, reinventing the wheel, Tumblr was very easy to use because they had a random feature. And so I just used that. And so, you know, I would every day I would add a bunch of lines from mostly poems. So there's some fiction and nonfiction in there, but it's mostly poetry because that seems to work the best. And within about a month, I had several hundred. And that's when I kind of made it available to other people. And I've been adding since, that was in spring of 2012. And most weeks I add prophecies, I call them, or answers, whatever you want to call them. And now there's over 3,245 as of this morning.
Reb is not the only person using the internet as a new site for bibliomancy. As she mentioned, there are sites devoted to offering prophecies from religious texts. Reb also shared with me that she has a poet friend who performs bibliomancy for her friends on her Facebook page. But I wanted to know why Reb made the site, what it means for her, and what she imagines it means for users. Reb described herself as a seeker and shared that she uses the site to answer her own questions and to provide her with prompts for her own writing. When I asked about her intentions for how readers use the site, she said that, like any author, her intentions don't matter as much. Meaning is entirely what readers invest in the prophecies they receive. Sometimes readers receive the messages they need to hear at exactly the right time, as Red illustrates in an example.
Well, I don't remember the exact prophecy, but I had, I knew someone who was in a very kind of bad place in her life, and she had asked the question. She got a very, the answer was very, basically a "you are loved" answer. And it seems something so simple, but it made a very profound effect, because it's what she needed to hear. And something like that. So that made me very happy, because I mean, obviously I have no control over who gets what answer, and sometimes, people need a really kind of, like loving answer. And other times people need, a kick in the pants. But I was very happy that, this particular friend got that answer.
I asked if she'd received any negative feedback to the site, and she said any negative feedback she's received has been for the idea of bibliomancy, not her site.
The idea seems like just like a bullshit idea. I have a friend who's a musician, and he sees it just as, some superstition kind of, and I was like, but you could use it to write lyrics. You could use it to, I'm trying to tell them, there's a lot of creative, I'm not a missionary. I'm not here to make people believe or disbelieve in bibliomancy. I mean, whatever someone's personal opinion about anything supernatural or, spiritual to me is their own business. But, I was like trying, and he was just not having it.
Talking about the negative feedback reminded me that Reb's intention for the site extends beyond providing prophecies. She envisions the site as a place where readers can discover contemporary poets with whom they may not be familiar, and as a place to spark creativity. A prophecy may be inspiring new poetry, writing, music, or art. This is a site of which Reb is the creator, but over which she purposefully doesn't assert control. Readers who use the site can create their own interpretations of the prophecies they receive. I wanted to see how varied opinions of the same prophecy might be, and so I asked the Bibliomancy Oracle a question and sought out multiple readings of the same fortune.
Well, I asked a question of the Oracle earlier this morning, and I'll share with you the prophecy I received and maybe get your feedback on what you think it means. Okay, so I asked this morning, this podcast, which is not yet launched, will it be successful, or is this work I should be doing? And the prophecy I received was a quotation from Theory Makes Chaos Work by Roland Prevost. Okay. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is, quote, "Where nothing's a better future, blank."
Where nothing is a better future?
Where nothing's a better future, blank. What should I do with that?
That's interesting. let me think. Yeah, I guess that would be saying where something is, where you can't see an answer, nothing seems like a good option, blank. And that, to me, that would be refresh your perspective, perhaps change it, or that's how I would interpret it after spending a minute thinking about it.
Well, I know I put you on the spot.
I wanted to see if it was possible to get another reading of the same prophecy. Maybe my prophecy was telling me to refresh my perspective, but I wanted a second opinion just in case. For help, I turned to my partner on this podcast, our technical director, Taylor.
Okay, Taylor, buckle up. I asked the Bibliomancy Oracle a question on our behalf. I asked if the podcast was going to be successful and if this is what we should be doing.
And what
did you say? It said, when nothing's a better future, blink. What does this mean?
What does this mean?
When nothing's a better future, blink.
I mean, obviously it's saying the apocalypse is coming and nothing matters.
Blink. Taylor, no! Too dark. Too dark.
As Taylor's reading shows, clearly a central element of bibliomancy is each reader's perspective that they bring to reading and interpreting the meaning of any prophecy or fortune. It occurs to me that in each of the cases we've talked about here, whether in history or Tumblr, so much is based on assigning meaning to a fortune after the fact. Maybe to frame it as a self-fulfilling prophecy, as Sarah Grand did, presenting the story of her career as a writer as all but hopeless, but for Bible dipping that predicted her success. For others, like Augustine, a chance encounter with a book emphasized a deep spiritual connection and a calling to religious life, a calling that determined and defined how he presented his life story in his autobiography. We only know about his bibliomancy through his autobiography, and personal history is, like bibliomancy, an act that can link life events to a sense of fate. The Bibliomancy Oracle on Tumblr works as a result of a random number generator, randomly spitting out poetry to visitors. What if, instead of a random number generator, bibliomancy is a language generator, providing readers with words to help them tell their own stories? Readers have used and continue to use bibliomancy for a variety of reasons, making the appearance of a unifying theme as difficult to decipher as some of the prophecies themselves. But then again, maybe that's the point. Just as bibliomancy trades in random fortunes, it can be used to explain the randomness of life itself, how we've decided to interpret events in our own lives, package them as wishes, and tell them as stories. If, as Joan Didion once wrote, we tell ourselves stories in order to live, we may just use the prophecies we find in books to explain why we're here and what it might mean. How we think about faith, how we choose our partners, how we stumbled into our careers, these are all questions of life. While notable examples exist in the histories of much-studied people like Augustine and Robert Browning, the idea that we think of our lives as narrative in which key events figure prominently is not the province of famous readers alone. What we read, how we read, and why we read helps us to tell our own stories. Literary magic eight balls may not predict the future, but they may help to explain our choices in hindsight. Even, and especially in the case of Augustine Burroughs, why anyone would choose to have fish sticks for dinner. Thank you for listening to the first in what we hope will be a series of reported episodes on reading-related topics. Visit our website, www.chapterspod.com, to sign up for an interview, to share your own stories of bibliomancy, or the stories of what books have meant the most to you in your life. We are dedicated to sharing the stories of readers' lives through the books that have meant the most to them. You can follow us at ChaptersPod on Twitter and find us on Facebook. This episode was written, produced, and presented by me, Mary Mahoney. You can find me at MaryMahoney123 on Twitter. This episode was engineered and produced by our technical director, Taylor, who also wrote our theme music. She can be found at MJTThePhD. I'd like to thank Reb Livingston for appearing on the show, and if you'd like to try the Bibliomancy Oracle, please visit bibliomancyoracle.tumblr.com. You can also find a link on the blog on our website.